Is hydraulic fracturing for natural gas a way for us to begin to solve climate change, or will it set us back? This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. Today, the impacts of the gas boom on climate change in our reporting project called Gas Planet. This work first aired last summer, and it was just named Best Documentary by both the Pennsylvania Associated Press Broadcasters Association and the Western Pennsylvania Press Club. It also won the Press Club's Ed King Memorial Award for the best radio work produced in 2012. We're re-airing Gas Planet this and next week and adding some new updates. And now, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier takes you through Gas Planet.
The rise of fracking for shale gas in places like Texas and Pennsylvania has been hailed as a victory for American ingenuity and energy independence. And it's raised hopes that we can fuel our economy without harming the environment. The largest gas reserve in the U.S. is the Marcellus Shale, a massive deposit that runs from Kentucky to upstate New York. In Pennsylvania, drilling for shale gas has gone on at a breakneck speed. And all this activity has had a big impact on the economy. Paul Batista used to have 5 workers at his industrial supply business in Washington County, south of Pittsburgh. Now he has 15. One of those was his brother, who'd left the area years ago.
My brother's been in Florida for 25 years, totally out of work in Florida. Came up here for 8 months to work with us. And he just could not believe. He says, people in Florida will stand in line for 4 or 5 hours to get a job at Walmart. And he says, and here, you can't get enough workers.
When a well is fracked, millions of gallons of water, sand, and chemicals are pumped underground to tear open tiny fractures in the rock. Some near wells say it's made people sick and polluted groundwater. John Fair lives just north of Pittsburgh in Butler County. A gas well was drilled nearby. Now, he says, his water well is contaminated.
Well, then the water went from clear, like this, that's from the wells, to as brown as the mud puddles out there in the yard or worse. And it went to black, looked like motor oil. Is that the fracking? I guess they're done drilling around the area, so it's not their concern anymore, right? They got their wells in, they're making their money. We're out of here. Pity the next area they go into. Yeah, good luck.
These are local problems, but there's another way fracking impacts all of us: climate. When it's burned, natural gas has about half the carbon footprint of another major energy source, coal. But now there's debate about the climate implications of shale gas. Some say it might actually be making our footprint bigger. Up next, we'll meet a scientist whose prediction about shale gas was so astounding it made him a celebrity to some and a villain to others. That's when Gas Planet continues. Please stay with us. Last year, a scientist from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, published a paper in a scientific journal. The journal is called Climactic Change. Robert Howarth is a scientist who published the paper. He teaches environmental science at Cornell. He got the idea for the paper about 3 years ago. That's when the region around Ithaca was drawing interest from the oil and gas industry because it sits on top of the Marcellus Shale, a vast deposit of natural gas. Here's how he tells the story.
I was on sabbatical leave in France in the spring of 2009, and when I came home, all of a sudden there were advertisements all over the place touting natural gas as a clean-burning fuel, a low-carbon footprint, good for the environment, good for global change.
The ads were correct to a point. When you burn it, natural gas is the cleanest of the fossil fuels. So you would choose it over coal, for instance, because its carbon footprint is smaller. That's the idea, at least.
The problem is that natural gas is methane. It's overwhelmingly methane. And methane is an extremely potent greenhouse gas. So small leakages matter a huge amount in terms of the greenhouse gas footprint.
Howarth knew a lot about methane, having studied it as a grad student in the 70s. So with the prospect of the gas industry coming to his own backyard, he saw a research opportunity. He and his colleagues, Rene Santoro and Tony Ingraffia, cobbled together the few studies that existed and made some predictions.
And we concluded that shale gas has a very large greenhouse gas footprint.
So large, it was actually worse than coal. Haworth's co-author, Tony Ingraffia, is an engineer and outspoken critic of fracking. He says the public sees natural gas as a bridge fuel that will help us slowly lower our carbon footprint.
And what we're saying, Bob, Renee, and I, and a large number of other scientists around the world, is that ain't true.
Part of their reasoning is that when a well is fracked, a large amount of gas comes right out of the ground. Sometimes that gas is vented to the atmosphere. The industry says this is pretty rare, that usually drillers capture this or burn it off, which greatly lowers the amount of methane emitted from these wells. Haworth says he initially thought this was the case too, but heard otherwise from people who worked in the industry.
Colleagues in industry came back and said, oh, no, it's a much bigger problem than you're estimating. It's not that the fluid comes up with methane dissolved in it and it's released. This is big burps of gas.
When it came out, the paper blew up in the media. Time magazine even named Haworth and Ingraffia among its list of 100 most influential people in 2011. The oil and gas industry hated it and called it garbage science in the press.
I don't think we have to get into those kinds of adjectives, but I think in terms of understanding whether it's a reflection of what goes on in the real world, I think it is not.
Howard Feldman of the American Petroleum Institute says the data Haworth used was based on EPA numbers that overstated emissions. His organization surveyed 90,000 wells recently and cut those estimates in half. Scientists who study this issue were also leery about the paper. Among these was Paulina Jaramillo of Carnegie Mellon University.
Well, he said natural gas is worse than coal. That's a big statement.
Jaramillo is an expert on carbon footprint. She went back and studied the issue and found that even with high rates of methane leaking out, shale gas was still better than coal.
All of the studies that I've seen that have come after his show that that's not true. There's even a group at Cornell from the geology department, I think, that came up with a response to Haworth's paper.
I felt that their conclusions were just completely wrong.
Larry Kathels is the author of what's been called the other Cornell paper, in which he and several of his colleagues in the geology department defend natural gas.
Is it as good as going directly to a zero carbon source? No. But it's 40% as good.
And half a greenhouse benefit is better than none at all. One bone of contention is how much gas is leaking out during fracking. Haworth estimates it's between 3.5% and 8%. Kathels says that's just crazy.
Are we leaking 8%, 9%? I don't think so. Not even close. You know, you've got companies that have a valuable product. They're not going to be, losing 10% of it.
Kathels and others have also criticized Haworth's use of a time scale. If you compare gas to coal over a short time frame, gas looks worse. That's because of a basic difference between the two greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, or CO2, and methane.
Methane will come out of the atmosphere, if it hasn't already, very quickly, in a decade or so. But CO2 will not.
In fact, it'll stay in the atmosphere for a century or longer. But Haworth used both a 20-year and a 100-year timescale because some scientists think we could soon reach a tipping point in global warming. They say at current rates, we could heat the Earth enough to melt a vast store of methane and other carbon frozen in the Arctic within a few decades. So the damage done in the next few years is crucial, Ingraffia says.
We don't have 100 years to fix the problem. We don't have 50 years to fix the problem. We have half a human generation. We have 4 presidential terms of office. Call it whatever you want. That's the amount of time we have to fix the problem.
There are other differences in the way these studies crunch the numbers, but there's something else that's separating these two sides.
I'd have to say he's more of an advocate than really worried. You know, a scientist should be worried about getting to the bottom of the issue.
Kathels thinks Haworth cherry-picked data to make gas out to be the bad guy. He points out that Haworth's study was funded in part by the Park Foundation, which has also supported anti-fracking groups. Haworth and Ingraffia point out that Kathels has received money from the oil and gas industry for his research in the past, though not for this particular report. And Ingraffia he goes even further.
You should go back and ask Larry why he thinks he has credentials to weigh on in this issue, or anybody else who co-authored his paper with him. None of them have credentials on this problem. So they're pedestrians arguing science.
That is some serious academic smack talk. Michael Oppenheimer is the editor of Climactic Change, the journal where all these papers appeared. I asked him whether Cathles, a geologist, was qualified to comment on a paper about the atmosphere.
I don't care what either Howarth or Cathles et al.'s credentials were previously. The important thing is, what did they write?
Complicating the matter is the fact that Cathles has an unorthodox view of climate change. Though he doesn't like the term, he's a climate skeptic.
First of all, I'm a scientist, so I'm a skeptic on everything. Everything. Climate is no different.
Solar wind and the Earth's orbit are some of the things that Cathles thinks might be changing the climate, perhaps more than people. The vast majority of scientists, however, disagree. They say that we, people, are the climate changers. Potential bias notwithstanding, the federal government is taking steps to make fracking better on greenhouse gases. By 2015, the EPA will require virtually all of the gas that comes out of the well, those big burps of gas you heard about, to be captured. Howarth says it's a great first step, but thinks other leaks will still make gas worse than coal, at least for the next few decades. So what will be the impact of the fracking boom on climate change? Robert Jackson of Duke University has studied the environmental impact of natural gas development. He's not sold on Howarth's argument, but he said that doesn't mean the paper's completely wrong either.
The real question is, how much better does it have to really be considered a bridge fuel?
And we won't really know the answer to that until we find out just how much gas escapes during fracking. More information is coming soon. The EPA is collecting data on methane emissions from drilling and should release its results later this year. Two people who will be watching closely, Bob Howarth and Larry Cathles. Next up, we'll visit a gas well where scientists are trying to measure methane emissions. For more about fracking and climate change, go to our website, AlleghenyFront.org. I'm Reed Frazier.
This is Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. You're listening to Gas Planet, the Allegheny Front's documentary on fracking and climate change. Now, since this show first aired last year, more data has come in on the question of how much methane comes out of natural gas wells produced by fracking. For more on this, I'm joined by Reed Frazier, the lead producer on Gas Planet. Reed, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jennifer. Thank you.
Reed, tell us what kind of research has come out on this subject lately.
So there have been two significant findings since we aired the show. The first is that a group of researchers from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also known as NOAA, published a paper in which they studied the amount of methane. They actually measured the methane coming out of gas wells in a drilling field in Colorado. And what they found was basically at the end of their conclusion, they find that there's a leakage rate of about 4% of methane from those wells. And that puts it more in line with the Robert Howarth estimate, the high-end estimate of methane emissions from these wells. And after the study was published, they announced that they had found even higher levels in Utah, in a heavily drilled area there. That study actually was questioned by one prominent writer for the Council on Foreign Relations, Michael Levy, who said basically that the NOAA team had found good data, that their measurements were fine, but that they had misinterpreted it, and the net result was that they had made gas out to be worse than it actually is in terms of methane emissions.
I know that the Environmental Protection Agency just released a study on this topic as well.
The EPA lowered its estimates of how much they think is coming out of these gas wells, from 2.5% to 2%. So those are basically, you have one side, you know, one big piece of data saying that there's a lot of emissions, and another side saying there's less and less emissions.
We just heard about Cornell's Robert Haworth in your last piece. What does he have to say about the Environmental Protection Agency's lowering of estimates for methane emissions?
Well, Haworth basically says that the EPA ignored studies like the NOAA study I just talked about and listened instead to the industry. And he basically thinks that the EPA is wrong in this latest estimate. And I'll play a clip of what he said.
In the face of that quality data, for the EPA to instead just respond to the industry pressure and downgrade, I think was wrong on their part.
Now, I also talked to Howard Feldman of the American Petroleum Institute, and I asked him about the NOAA study. And he said that these are just very preliminary pictures of what the methane emissions are, that of the thousands of wells that are out there, the number that have actually been studied is pretty small. Here is what Feldman said.
There are a bunch of snapshots that people have taken with that come across at different levels. It really helpful to see what I call the movie, the integrated view of what do we know about different locations over different times, because if you just took a measurement somewhere today at one spot, it doesn't really tell you what's going on in terms of a big picture.
Feldman also points out that new regulations from the EPA on methane emissions at the wellhead itself will undoubtedly improve the situation, and those regulations take effect in 2015.
We still have this question, is natural gas a bridge fuel? Are we any closer to answering it with all this information?
Well, I think that the general consensus is still that gas is better than coal. But I think, you know what they say, more studies are needed, and that's kind of what everyone in this field says. There is one study that a lot of people will be paying attention to. It's by a team of University of Texas researchers, and they're working with the Environmental Defense Fund and several oil and gas companies to study these emissions. So when that comes out, and it should come out fairly soon, it'll grab a lot of people's attention and refocus this argument.
Thanks, Reed.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jennifer.
For more on the debate over whether fracking is good or bad for climate change, including links to the papers we've discussed, please go to our website. Up next, more from Gas Planet, including an inside look at what it's like to try to measure methane near a gas well.
So that's resin time right there, huh?
Wow.
Whoa.
Methane hunting. Stay tuned to Gas Planet on the Allegheny Front.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from Table Magazine, sharing food, culture, and lifestyle in Western Pennsylvania. The summer issue includes 20 things to do this summer and the science behind our constant cravings. Table Magazine's summer issue is on newsstands now. More information is available at tablemagazine.com.
You just heard the controversy about the carbon footprint of shale gas. The big question, how much gas is leaking from these wells? No one can say for sure. Eric Lipsky is a scientist at Penn State Greater Allegheny near Pittsburgh. For years, he studied air pollution like diesel exhaust with a group from Carnegie Mellon University. On a recent night, I joined Lipsky on his current search. He's now looking for methane from the gas industry. Lipsky's team assembles at a turnoff onto a gravel road in western Pennsylvania. The people who own this land allowed Lipsky with his mobile monitoring van onto the site. Helping him out tonight are a pair of undergraduates and Rawad Saleh, a PhD who's a postdoc at Carnegie Mellon.
So Mark's going to close the gate behind us.
All right, I guess you guys should go first and then we'll go behind you.
Okay, sounds good.
In the back of the van Lipsky's driving is $300,000 worth of monitoring equipment. So he takes it nice and slow down a steep road surrounded by fields.
We've done a few well sites. I'll expect to see some methane and some, our GC should see some peaks in the lighter hydrocarbon region.
The GC is a gas chromatograph, which measures chemicals in the air. That's different from a methane monitor. His group actually got a really nice one for the van recently. They've only started measuring methane at gas wells a few weeks ago, but for Lipsky, this day has actually been years in the making, writing grants, rigging the van, and contacting landowners to get access to their property. At the top of a hill, we get to a well pad. It's just a handful of pipes coming out of the ground, running into tanks and other equipment. Outside the van, Lipsky spells out his plan for the evening.
I haven't been on it yet, but supposedly there's a road that'll bring us around and get us to the top of the ridge.
It's a beautiful evening, but Lipsky's worried about wind. Too much wind and emissions can get blown right off the pad. No wind is also bad, because the methane will just go straight up into the air.
It might actually be okay tonight, since it's so calm. Stuff might just sort of mosey its way over and sit low. This is exciting, guys, don't you think?
I need drink.
They park the van next to two large green tanks that catch liquids coming out of the well. Inside the van, Lipsky and Saleh stare at a monitor.
So that's the residence time right there, huh?
Uh-huh.
Whoa. Oh my God, we're so excited.
The readouts are for two types of methane, named after different forms of carbon.
We're seeing methane 12, methane 13. The methane 12 is highest we've ever seen. We're up to 20 parts per million right now, and it's still rising. So it's 10 times higher than background right now.
Lipsky wants to check the gas chromatograph, the GC, for telltale chemicals in the air. If he finds them there, it's a strong indicator that the methane we're seeing is actually from the gas well itself. And lo and behold, that's exactly what he sees.
So this is what we call a signature. Congrats.
The jackpot.
It's exciting because that means there's something for us to understand, right? As a scientist, you want to see something either that you expect or that you don't expect. Either of those are good.
They move the van to the other side of the well, just 30 feet away, and methane levels there are normal. It's as if there was no gas well anywhere close to us.
But we're definitely fairly clean right now. We could just go over and see if we smell it where we were smelling to make sure it's still there.
So he uses the smell test to double check what the machines are saying, that there's gas on one side of the well, but not the other.
It's just, no, that's coming from here. Ugh, yeah. Ugh. Don't take a deep breath.
It's like what you smell at the gas station, but stronger. They take a few other measurements up a ridge, and the air there is fairly clean. Just before midnight, they take their last reading and pack up. They've definitely seen something tonight, but what it is isn't exactly clear. It could be they've picked up a small leak from a very productive gas well, or the well's using outdated technology. Back on the road, he says he'll need months of testing and analysis to answer these questions.
You know, when you're measuring stuff like this, you never know what the real answer is. And there's so many times I've done experiments where I get all excited because the instruments are doing stuff, and then you go and do the analysis, and it's like, oh, that was nothing.
A few weeks later, I caught up with Lipsky. He tested a few more wells, and they'd shown lower methane readings, but still higher than normal. He also went back to the well we visited, but with no monitoring equipment. The smell was gone, he said, and it looked like the company had moved some pipes around. Maybe, he said, someone fixed the leak. I'm Reed Frazier, and this is Gas Planet. Posting on your Facebook page or cranking up the AC. We use a lot of energy here in the U.S., often without thinking. It's the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in our country. But how many of us know where our power comes from? Jennifer Shredded Jordan hit the National Mall recently in Washington, D.C. to ask what people knew about energy, fuel, and climate. Here's what she found.
Jenny Blackwell?
Mary Lessard?
Do you know where your electricity comes from?
Assume a power plant? You're asking really hard questions.
Fuel, right? Is it fuel?
Do you have a preference for where you get your electricity?
Solar power would be better, right? Better for the environment to have solar power.
What do you think about climate change?
I know it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Are you concerned about it?
We got bigger problems in life.
That's something we can't control.
Tony Wilson.
Do you know where your electricity comes from?
Southern Maryland Electrical Co-op. I think it's generated powered by coal or something.
I have these sheets. Maryland. Okay, actually, there's a pretty high percentage that comes from nuclear in this area.
Right, I forgot about nuclear.
Yeah. Do you have a preference for where you get electricity?
Whatever is more cost efficient and less harmful to the environment.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Why is electricity good?
It's more convenient. We just left Frederick Douglass's house. And, you know, back then in the 1800s, you didn't have electricity. The lamps were powered by kerosene. The heating was wood and coal.
What do you think of climate change?
I think it's very important.
My name is Shelley Purcell.
Do you know where your electricity comes from?
No, I don't.
Would you like to know where your electricity is? Because I can tell you. Sure. comes from. So in Virginia, 45% comes from coal. That's about very similar to the national average, whereas another 40% comes from nuclear. Do you have a preference for where you get electricity?
I'd prefer it wasn't from nuclear reactors.
Have you heard of hydraulic fracturing?
No, I haven't.
What do you think about climate change?
It's probably part of nature, a lot of it, and that we're probably causing some of it.
Are you concerned about it?
Not overly, no.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay.
You're listening to Gas Planet from the Allegheny Front, an environmental news show based in Pittsburgh. For more on fracking and climate change, go to our website, alleghenyfront.org. Next week, we have more from Gas Planet, our documentary on climate change and the booming gas industry, including a story on big machines that make electricity from natural gas.
It is similar to a jet engine design. It's just much, much larger.
That's the Allegheny Front's Gas Planet next week. I'm Reed Frazier.
Thank you for listening to Gas Planet, produced by the Allegheny Front in partnership with Innovation Trail, which covers upstate New York's economy. For more on Gas Planet, go to our website, alleghenyfront.org/gasplanet. The executive producer is Kathy Naur. Our technical director is Janelle Pfeiffer. Thanks also to Daniel Tachik for work on this project. If you have a comment or question about what you heard, hit us up on Twitter at Allegheny Front or on our Facebook page. I'm Jennifer Shvetta Jordan. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments and the A.D. and J.W. Wilson Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation.